I was reflecting that since the questions last week were so wonderful and meaningful, and we didn't have time to answer them adequately. We just gave a brief introduction of what the answers should be. I was thinking and that we go back to verse 45, read that, and maybe a couple more verses, and then continue with the answer to last week's questions, which are related to these set of verses. Does that sound agreeable to everyone?
Yes, Maharaj.
Okay, so who's reading? Well, since it's just one verse, maybe I'll read. Adi Lila, chapter 1, verse 45. According to the deliberate opinion of all revealed scriptures, the spiritual master is none different from Lord Krishna. Lord Krishna, in the form of the spiritual master, delivers his devotees. Purport: the relationship of a disciple with a spiritual master is as good as his relationship with the Supreme Lord. The spiritual master always represents himself as the humblest servitor of the personality of Godhead, but the disciple must look upon him as a manifested representation of Godhead. Then verse 46, Kaviraj Goswami is repeating the famous Bhagavatam verse where spoken by Lord Krishna to Uddhava, quote, "One should know the Acharya as myself and never disrespect him in any way. One should not envy him, thinking him an ordinary man, for he is the representative of all the demigods." Okay. Seven, one should know the instructing spiritual master to be the personality of Krishna. Lord Krishna manifests himself as the super soul and as the greatest devotee of the Lord. And in this purport, Srila Prabhupada explains that there's two kinds of instructing spiritual masters. One is the liberated person, fully absorbed in meditation and devotional service. And the other is he who invokes the disciple's spiritual consciousness by means of relevant instructions. And then Srila Prabhupada goes on to explain how Srila Sanatana Goswami is the ideal spiritual master who delivers the shelter of the lotus feet of Madan Mohan. And Govindaji acts exactly like the Shikshu Guru. And Sri Sri Radha Gopinath are the ultimate attraction in spiritual realization. Om Agnatanamandasya. So, to continue the answer to Pritam Prabhu's wonderful question last week about whether the relationship with the spiritual master is eternal, And whether the name you receive upon initiation is eternal, start with the second part because that's easy. Part of your initiator name will be eternal. That is the Das or Dasi part, which is the most important part. The other part is subject to change, even under proper conditions in this lifetime. How the relationship with the spiritual master is eternal is demonstrated very beautifully in the pastime of Shyamananda Pandit, who was the disciple of Hriday Chaitanya, who was the disciple of Gauridas Pandit, who is Subal in Krishna Lila. Therefore, Gauridas Pandit had a very prominent Sakya Ras with his deities, Gornitai, and that's as far as you can go in Rasa with Lord Gauranga, Dasya, and Sakya Ras. So Shyamananda Pandit was entrusted by his Guru Maharaj, Hriday Chaitanya, to the care of Jiva Goswami in Vrindavan. And by association with Jiva Goswami and serving him, Shyamananda Pandit developed a taste for serving Radha and Krishna in Madhurya Ras. And this led to an extreme dramatic controversy, because while serving Srila Jiva Goswami in Vrindavan and sweeping the Kalpakunj Kutira, first of all, Shyamananda Pandit's original name was Duki Krishnadas. His name at birth was Duki, which means unfortunate, because all his brothers and sisters had died just after birth. So his parents named him Duki to remind Yamaraj of the sorrow the family had undergone, in hopes that Yamaraj would spare this child, which he did. So Duki, when he was old enough to consider initiation, was already convinced who his spiritual master was. When his parents asked him about initiation, he said, "My Guru Maharaj is Gauridas Pandit in Ambika Kalna." And seeing how he was so clear and convinced, his parents granted their permission that he go serve Gauridas Pandit to take initiation from him, at which time his name was changed from Duki, which means unfortunate, to Duki Krishnadas, which means the unfortunate servant of Krishna. So Duki Krishnadas was sent by Hriday Chaitanya in Bengal to Vrindavan with a letter of introduction to Jiva Goswami, who had opened a new school for advanced theology. And while he was serving Jiva Goswami and very humbly sweeping the Kalpakunj Kutir, where Radha and Krishna performed their Rasa Lila, he discovered the ankle bracelet which Srimati Radharani had purposely lost during Rasa Lila the night before. And understanding that it was hers, he touched it to his head, which changed his dark complexion to golden And the mark of that ankle bracelet was permanently imprinted on his forehead, which the devotees in the line of Shamananda Pandit continue to use that distinctive tilak to this day. So, finding that her ankle bracelet had been lost, Srimati Radharani sent Lalita Devi to find it. And she found Dukhi Krishnadas enthralled in great ecstasy. And she asked, Lalita Devi, disguised as an elderly Brijabasi lady, asked if he had discovered her friend's ankle bracelet. And he admitted that he did. But he would only hand it over if she revealed her true identity. And Lalita Devi said, that would be too much for you to bear. And nevertheless, she revealed herself. And Shamananda Pandit, no, he's still Dukhi Krishnadas at this time. But Lalita Devi touched the ankle bracelet to his forehead and gave him the name Shamananda Pandit, or Shamananda, because he had brought pleasure, Ananda, to Shyama by returning her lost ankle bracelet. So when Jiva Goswami saw that Dukhi Krishnadas had changed complexion to that of molten gold and was enthralled in divine ecstasy with a new, unique, and different tilak mark, he wanted to know the story which Dukhi Krishnadas told him, along with his new name, given by Lalita Devi herself, Shamananda. And that was to be kept confidential between Shamananda Pandit and Jiva Goswami. Nevertheless, a great controversy evolved, because when news reached back to Ambika Kalana, it sounded very much like Hriday Chaitanya's disciple had taken reinitiation, which is a great offense if your spiritual master is still in good standing. So it developed into a major controversy, which Lord Chaitanya had to personally intervene to resolve, even though he had already left the planet. So the essence of the lesson here is that a disciple may be entrusted to the care of another spiritual master in whose service the disciple can make further progress, which actually enhances the reputation of his previous guru. And the previous guru is never rejected or neglected, but is honored by the further progress in spiritual life made by the disciple. The other discussion that was not really completed last week was how Srila Narottam Das Thakur chose Lokanath Goswami as his guru. Lokanath Goswami, who was a personal associate of Mahaprabhu, was the first of the Gaudiya Vaishnavas that Lord Chaitanya sent to Vrindavan. It was actually two, was Lokanath Goswami and Bhugarbha Goswami together. And Lokanath Goswami set the standard of worship in a spirit of renunciation while in the Dham. And he was a hermit, one who worships the Lord in solitude, Vivekanandi. And in this spirit, he vowed not to take on any disciples. And Narottam Das Thakur had made a vow that he would not take initiation from anyone other than Lokanath Goswami. So Narottam Das Thakur began serving Lokanath Goswami unbeknownst to him by cleaning very elaborately the place in the forest where he would answer the call of nature. And Lokanath Goswami was so old at this time, it took him quite a while to realize that somebody was serving him. And Narottam Das Thakur would hide his broom. And then at night, he would go to that place and clean with his heart filled with joy. And he considered himself so fortunate to have this most menial service that he would hold his broom tightly to his chest, repeating to his broom that this is where I will get the strength to attain my Lord's lotus feet. And as he spoke that way to his broom, the torrents of tears just washed down his chest. And then when Lokanath Goswami finally realized that somebody was definitely serving him, he himself hid in the forest to see who was coming there at night. And then when he saw Narottam performing such a menial task, he told him, "What are you doing? You are a prince." And he was literally the son of a king. And Lokanath Goswami felt so embarrassed, and he asked him to desist. But Narottam fell at the feet of Lokanath Goswami, crying. And when Lokanath Goswami saw Narottam's humility and pain, his resolve softened, and he finally gave him initiation. There's one detail in the sequence of events that's not so well known, and that is when Lokanath Goswami continued refusing Narottam's request for initiation, Lord Chaitanya, who had already left this world, made a special appearance to Lokanath Goswami and said, "Did I not tell you to give him initiation?" And that's the point at which Lokanath Goswami finally consented. So what is a very similar pastime in modern history? In the life of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati. Does anybody know?
That Gaurakishara Das Babaji didn't want to initiate him, right?
That's... Yes. After Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur discovered the Yoga Pita, Gaurakishara Das Babaji came there for darshan. And he was of similar reclusive and renounced nature as was Lokanath Goswami. And yet Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati was very attracted to Gaurakishara Das Babaji at first sight. And Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur encouraged him to accept Gaurakishara Das Babaji as a spiritual master. When he approached him and begged to be accepted as his disciple, Gaurakishara Das Babaji was so reluctant because Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati was such a great scholar. And yet, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati kept pleading with him for initiation. And Gaurakishara Das Babaji finally replied, "I'll have to ask Mahaprabhu. And if he gives his permission, your desire will be fulfilled." So on another day, Siddhanta Saraswati approached him and again asked, what was Mahaprabhu's order? And Babaji Maharaj replied, I forgot to ask him. The third time, Siddhanta Saraswati requested Babaji Maharaj, he replied, I remembered to ask him, but he didn't answer. At that point, Siddhanta Saraswati stood up with his heart breaking and said, you, meaning Mahaprabhu and Srila Gaurakishora Das Babaji, are both worshippers of Krishna, the crest jewel of debauchees. So why should you take mercy on someone dedicated to ordinary morality like me? But if there's no mercy, weeping and weeping, I cannot sustain my life any longer. If I did not receive your grace, I see no purpose in holding on to my life. So at this point, seeing Siddhanta Saraswati's readiness to take his own life, Gaurakishora Das Babaji's heart melted, and he told him to take bath in the Saraswati and come back, at which time he gave him initiation and the name Sri Varshabhanavi Devi Daitadas. So this pastime is another striking resemblance to that of Narottam Das Thakur and Lokanath Goswami. So at this point, I would like to ask, and this is related to the name Panchatattva, what are the five different types of souls?
The jiva.
Yes.
The devotee.
Well, devotee is a jiva, normally.
The partial incarnation.
They all have tattva at the end. So you're talking about jiva tattva. What are the other four tattvas?
Guru tattva.
Guru tattva, yes.
Shiva tattva.
Shiva tattva, yes, which is very similar dynamic with Guru tattva.
Dham tattva
is, that's not an individual soul, that's a collection of souls. I'm talking about individual souls. So we have jiva tattva. Madhuri, you said shiva tattva, right?
Yes.
Guru tattva, that's three. What are the other two?
Shakti tattva.
I think I heard through all those different voices, someone said Vishnu tattva and somebody said Shakti tattva. If that's true, that covers all five. The next question is, who are these different five in the Panchatattva? Beginning with, let's just go right down from top to bottom. Not top to bottom, there's no bottom, but beginning to end. According to the Panchatattva mantra, who is, what kind of soul is Lord Chaitanya? Vishnu Tattva.
Okay.
What kind of soul is Lord Nityananda?
Guru Tattva.
Guru Tattva, yes. What kind of soul is Advaita?
Shiva Tattva.
Shiva Tattva, yes. What kind of soul is Gadadhar Pandit?
Shakti Tattva.
Yes. And Srivas Thakur is what kind of soul?
Jiva Tattva.
Yes. And who is Srivas Thakur's spiritual master? That's actually a complex question, so rather than lose any time, Srivas Thakur is Narada Muni. So, in a sense, his guru would be Brahmaji. But he has a very interesting story, which is revealed by Kavi Karnapur in his famous Chaitanya Chandodaya Natakam, where, and for those who aren't familiar, this is a drama written by Kavi Karnapur, the son of Sivananda Sen, on the request of Maharaj Prataparudra, who was so concerned about the devotees after Lord Gauranga left, how they would sustain their lives in the anguish of separation. So he commissioned Kavi Karnapur to write this drama, Chaitanya Chandodaya Natakam. And in Act 1, Lord Chaitanya asked Srivas Thakur if he remembers how he was saved from death, and at that very time infused with Narada Shakti. And Srivas answers that, yes, he did remember. And then he tells the story. Before the Lord came into my life, from childhood to 16 years of age, I was wild, merciless, offensive to guru and brahmanas, and just had a generally restless heart, which was as hard as wood. I was proud, conceited, and even in my dreams, I never heard or chanted the Lord's glories or his holy name. Then, somehow, perhaps because of some previous pious activities, a kind-hearted person came to me in a dream and said, O Brahmana, in name only, who can give you advice? You will not listen to anyone. And yet, I will tell you directly, you have only 1 year of life ahead of you, and then you will die untimely. Do not waste the short remaining period of your life. So the next day, awaking at dawn, Srivas remembered the good advice he received in his dream. And first he was unhappy that his life would be cut short. And then he decided that I will give up on all my misdeeds and make a vow to try to understand the ultimate goal of life. And soon thereafter, in the Narada Purana, I found this verse, Harinam, 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 Eva Kevalam, Kalo Nasteva, 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 Gatiranyata. In this age of quarrel and hypocrisy, the only means of deliverance is chanting the holy name of the Lord. There is no other way, there is no other way, there is no other way. So, Srivas said, I considered this a direct message from Lord Krishna, and I immediately gave up materialism and took shelter of Lord Krishna's name alone. And this gave me great peace while I waited for that moment of death. And that time came when I was at the house of Devananda Pandit hearing Srimad Bhagavatam and his lucid commentary on the various verses. And while hearing the story of Prahlad Maharaj, the predicted time of death arrived, I fell unconscious and fell from the balcony into the courtyard below. Then, within a precious moment, someone rescued me from the jaws of death. And understanding I was still alive, I was overcome with gratitude. And as I tried to stand up and keep my balance, my friends brought me back home. And I realized that at that time, he's talking to Lord Gauranga. I realized at that time, O Lord, you brought me back to my senses, saved me, and infused me at that moment with Narada Shakti. And Lord Chaitanya confirmed that it was true. Advaita Acharya concurred. adding that Srivas is glorious. He is truly the home, which means Vas, of glory, Sri, and therefore rightly named Srivas Thakur. Now, we should understand that this story is simply a lila by which it appears that Srivas was infused with Narada Shakti at a particular moment in time, whereas in reality, it is simply an expression of how the unlimited polydimensional eternal truth slips into the world of three dimensions. So that gives some bearing on the five different types of souls and how they're all personified in the Panchatattva and therefore named Panchatattva. Now, amongst these different tattvas, Guru Tattva is very similar to Shiva Tattva because Lord Shiva is a combination of divine and non-divine and therefore very difficult to understand, as is Guru Tattva. Because Guru Tattva, you know, he can come from the Jiva category or the Shakti category, or even the Vishnu Tattva. But for the sake of this discussion, we'll focus on the Jiva and how when because you know Srila Prabhupada says right here in Chaitanya Charitamrita that the spiritual master is to be considered a representative of either Lord Nityananda or Srimati Radharani. And the reason it can be those two options, which might appear somewhat rasa-bhasa, but it's not. And how the original guru, Adi Guru, is one of those two personalities, and what qualifies which personality it is, was described by Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati in terms of the inner and outer circle of Guru Tattva. The inner circle, meaning the associates of Madhurya Ras, have Srimati Radharani as their guru, and she is the guru of Krishna, as explained in that wonderful conversation when Srimati Radharani sees Vrindadevi appearing from the forest, and she asked my dear friend Vrinda, from where do you come? And Vrinda says, I come from the lotus feet of Krishna. Oh, where is he? Vrinda says, he's at Radha Kund. Radha asks, what is he doing? Vrinda replies, he's learning how to dance. Radha asks, who's his teacher? Vrinda replies, your image, Radha, revealing herself in every tree, in every creeper, in every living entity, in every direction, is roaming like a dancing teacher, and Krishna is dancing behind. So that inner circle, including Krishna and all those confidential associates in Madhurya Ras, acknowledge their guru to be Srimati Radharani. The outer circle, meaning the other four rasas, honor Lord Nityananda as their guru. He is Guru Tattva in four of the primary rasas, excluding Madhurya. But no one can enter this inner circle to claim Radha as their guru without the approval and recommendation from the outer circle given by Lord Nityananda. So when Lord Nityananda or Srimati Radharani sees a jiva soul who is especially and exceptionally humble and compassionate, they may empower him by their potency to deliver other jivas to the lotus feet of, according to the rasa, either Lord Nityananda or Sri Sri Radha and Krishna. So as in the case of Dukhi Krishnadas, who served Hriday Chaitanya, who served Gaur Nitai in Sakya Ras, which is the Gaur Nitai are only served in two rasas, Dasya and Sakya. And when, no, actually, they're only worshipped in Dasya Ras. And when the perfection of that worship of Lord Gauranga and Dasya Ras bears fruit, and that's why Lord Chaitanya is addressed Mahaprabhu, because he's only worshipped in a master-servant relationship. So what is the fate of those who have other rasas? When that Sakya rasa is perfected in service to Mahaprabhu of Nadia, he then reveals his other feature as Radha and Krishna of Braja, and then reveals the devotee's particular name, form, qualities, pastime, service to Radha and Krishna and Vrindavan. So it all begins by surrendering to Guru, taking shelter of his lotus feet, and receiving the holy name. And the holy name reveals in time the form, qualities, pastimes of the Lord, and the particular devotee's specific service to their lordships. Does that answer last week's questions? Pritam Prabhu, you're the one who asked the question.
Yes.
Good.
Yes, very much. I mean, it's more than I could understand. But yeah, thank you. I need to listen to the recording again to understand every aspect of it.
Well, these are wonderful topics, and you know, as you digest, we can go deeper.
Maharaj?
Yes?
I missed a point. I mean, again, because you started with Shyamananda Das, and then you ended also with Shyamananda Das explaining.
I ended with Srivas. Began with Shyamananda Pandit, ended with Srivas Thakur.
But you just now, didn't you go back again to, you went back to Shyamananda again?
Yes.
So what?
Because he's a highly exemplary personality in revealing the dynamics of a guru-disciple relationship.
See, I'm still not able to follow. What was the main point you were saying? Because of this, I'm still not able.
This was related to Pritam Prabhu's question from last week: is the relationship with disciple and guru eternal? Yes, it's eternal, and it's not limited, because a disciple may be entrusted by one guru in one rasa to another guru in another rasa, if that is where that disciple belongs in terms of receiving inspiration and instruction in serving in a higher rasa. Now, in a situation like that, which was also very strongly highlighted in the pastime, one never neglects his former guru. And you see that consistent throughout that whole drama. Because Shyamananda Pandit was, you know, I mean, you could almost say interrogated. He was questioned by various groups of devotees, including an assembly of the Mahansa in Vrindavan, who assembled to resolve the controversy. Did he take initiation, reinitiation from Jiva Goswami? And Jiva Goswami explained in a cryptic way how to answer the question, which didn't really... First, it pacified Hriday Chaitanya, but then after the assembly of Mahants, who asked him to answer truthfully, have you taken reinitiation? And he said, no. He said, everything that has transpired is all by the mercy of my master, Hriday Chaitanya. So it seemed like it was resolved. And then they all went on parikrama together. But then one night, a group of actors were portraying Rasalila, upon seeing which Shyamananda Pandit fell unconscious and did not come with the rest of the devotees and his Guru Maharaj back to their camp. And then Hriday Chaitanya began considering that maybe this controversy is not resolved, because Shyamananda Pandit is definitely absorbed in Madhurya Ras, a mood very different from my Guru Maharaj, Gauridas Pandit. So saying, maybe it's not resolved at all. So then, when Shyamananda Pandit came back late at night, Gauridas Pandit was so furious, he began beating him with a stick, making bruises on his back, and the devotees had to physically restrain him. This is crazy. Just control yourself and reconsider in the morning. He said, okay, I will. And in the morning, I will give my verdict whether or not I reject as a disciple Shyamananda. So in the morning, in great anticipation, everyone was waiting for the verdict. But that night, in his dream, Lord Gauranga approached Hriday Chaitanya. And Hriday Chaitanya offered his obeisances, looked up, and Lord Chaitanya turned his back. And Gauridas Pandit saw that his back was bruised and marked with beatings from a stick. And Hriday Chaitanya said, my lord, who has done this? And Lord Chaitanya said, the same thing that Shyamananda Pandit had been consistently saying all along. Lord Chaitanya said, this is all by the grace of Hriday Chaitanya. And then you were beating Shyamananda Pandit, who was as dear to me as my life. So I took the beating on my own back to protect him, just like Haridas Thakur. And Lord Chaitanya. So then Hriday Chaitanya fell down crying, and he realized and repented. So the next morning, when the Mahants are waiting in great suspense, what is the verdict? Hriday Chaitanya came out Shyamananda Pandit offers his obeisances. Hriday Chaitanya proclaimed to the assembly of Mahants, from today on, Shyamananda Pandit is no longer my disciple. And everyone gasped in great horror. And then Hriday Chaitanya continued, from today on, Shyamananda Pandit is my life and soul. Then Shyamananda Pandit fell at the lotus feet of Hriday Chaitanya and said, you are my life and soul, and nothing can ever change that. So it is a very dramatic presentation of how a disciple of a guru in one rasa may be entrusted at some time to a guru in another rasa to train the devotee in that rasa, if that is his eternal disposition. So back to the original question, is the relationship with the guru eternal? Yes, it is. But it may change when the guru sees that a disciple's propensity, and specifically his rasa, is something different than his own, in which case he'll be entrusted to a guru in that rasa. Does that answer last week's questions?
Yes, Maharaj. Thank you.
Thank you.
Maharaj?
Yes?
Now you brought up more questions by your answer.
That's standard procedure in spiritual life. Every answer creates more questions.
So you said...
And in the exchange, we go deeper and deeper.
Okay. So you said that a disciple may be entrusted to another spiritual master. Are there cases where a disciple maybe has shelter from other gurus without being exactly entrusted for different reasons? And in the verses, it mentioned about Paramatma and Chaita Guru, and what about that guru? That's a whole other topic, I guess, huh?
Okay, well, shelter and entrusted are not synonymous, although they may be, and not necessarily so.
Uh-huh.
They're both confidential matters. To take shelter of a Vaishnava is a confidential matter, as is being entrusted. They're almost synonymous, but we can take shelter of a Vaishnava without necessarily being entrusted to him for training by our Guru Maharaj.
And that's acceptable.
If it's ordained, and that's why I keep emphasizing, like it was like a loving competition of determination between Lokanath Goswami and Narottam Das Thakur.
Yeah.
Lokanath Goswami made a vow he would never take disciples. Narottam Das Thakur made a vow he would not accept anyone other than Lokanath Goswami. So there was a kind of loving competition to see. And Lokanath Goswami's exact words were that your determination has exceeded mine, therefore I'll accept you. But what's not so commonly known, and is a very significant element in that whole transition, was that Lord Gauranga appeared to Lokanath Goswami and reminded him, did I not tell you to accept? To accept Narottam Das Thakur as your disciple. So the issue is that these things have to be ordained. We can't just, you know, make up our own mind that this is what I want. I mean, it can, but it has to be ordained before it's what's the word? Consummated.
Right. And sometimes that may not be so clear initially.
Exactly.
Okay.
And that's where patience is essential, because everything will be revealed in time if we're, you know, chaste to our commitment and vows and sadhana.
And what part does Chaita Guru play?
Chaita Guru is super soul.
Mm-hmm.
So there has to be consistency between Chaita Guru within the heart and his representative, whether he be Diksha or Siksha Guru. There has to be, you know, unity, harmony, consensus between the different forms of guru and sadhu and shastra for anything to be verified as spiritually true. And that protects us from, you know, the defects of the mind that can imagine anything. We have to have that three-way confirmation, guru, sadhu, shastra, and amongst the gurus, Chaita Guru, outward guru, they all have to be in conformity aligned before anything can be accepted as absolute.
And sometimes that may take some time to be fully revealed.
Yes, as in the case, I mean, that controversy in Shyamananda Pandit's case, that went on, or even the loving competition between Lokanath Goswami and Narottam Das, these things went on for years.
So the point is to be chaste in the heart and really, you know, be chaste to Guru, and really, what is it that you want, you know, Lord, and what my Guru wants and what the Lord wants, and just...
And what I want?
And what I want because it's my Dharma, like that?
Yes.
Yeah, like what's really... And then just being remaining.
And what we're seeking here is eternal relationships. Which are already established, but have been, you know, lost or covered or whatever. We're waiting for, we're patiently waiting for the eternal truth to be revealed over time as we pass our various challenges, trials, tribulations, and tests, testing our fidelity. To see if we're qualified for the truth to be revealed. And that's why, you know, Srila Prabhupada was so adamant not to go to the Babaji's, especially at Radhakund, who were so eager to give devotees their Siddha Pranali. You know, reveal your eternal form and function. Which just creates havoc and disturbance to the Lord, to the devotees, to the individual, and everyone. Or the ongoing controversy about where, you know, where the soul come from. Because there appears to be different answers to that. But there's no real contradiction. It's just something that we can't understand while in this world, and Srila Prabhupada gave the analogy that if you fall off a ship into the ocean, don't just try to figure out how you fell in. Try to figure out how to get back on board, and then you'll understand everything. So there's some things we cannot understand with our three-dimensional mind. But if we're faithful and patient and determined, everything will be revealed in due course of time.
That's beautiful and relieving. Simultaneously.
Well, you know, as disciples and grand disciples of Srila Prabhupada, we just have faith that whatever he says is perfect. If he says you can't understand something like the origin of the soul, we accept that. And we also accept that, or we actually see that, you know, people who debate and try to figure it out, they'll continue doing so forever, and they'll never figure it out. Because you can't in this world with a three-dimensional mind. If you stay here in this world forever trying to figure out where you came from, you'll never get back to where you came from, and you'll never understand it. If you have faith in Srila Prabhupada's words that you can't understand it in the States, just focus on getting back on the ship, meaning going back to home, and then everything will be revealed. That's the beauty in faithful disciples. They have that confidence that they just go about their service with assurance that in due course of time, everything will be revealed. And that's why it's so refreshing to be around what we call Prabhupada men or women, just those who have, you know, confidence that Srila Prabhupada has given us everything. And Srila Prabhupada's books are like time capsules. They don't just sensationally, you know, reveal whatever you want. They reveal as you qualify more and more, deeper and deeper, but not in a sensationalistic way before you're qualified already. And some people want that sensationalism and they'll go elsewhere. We'll stick with those who are committed to Srila Prabhupada's teachings and example, which gives complete confidence that everything will be revealed in due course of time as we are qualified and ready for it. Otherwise, if something is revealed prematurely, you can't sustain it. And then you'll fall down, like Siddha Panali. And of course, we had that very dramatic pastime right here in Vrindavan, that very same topic. The night of the horse department Darshan with Srila Prabhupada. That's a topic for some other night.
Thank you, Maharaj.
Thank you.
Hare Krishna.
Our time is up.
No, Maharaj. I mean, hold on.
Madhvi's in charge of time.
Yes, and I'm a little bit conflicted here, so I want to bring it out. So, we were trying to do it to end around 7. It's not, I'm the one who actually can ask you those questions. So, but I also see, let's see if there's, I know Lila Shuka, are you there? Okay, she had a simple question.
Yeah, I do, I'm here.
Okay.
Maharaj, on the first call, you quoted something. It was a really wonderful quote. I wrote it down word for word. And you quoted it again on the second call. But I don't know if you were quoting from Chaitanya Charitamrita or somewhere else. Can I read it to you?
Yes.
It says, Vaishnavism stands alone amongst the revealed religions of the world in providing a specific account of the name, form, qualities, and pastimes and the individual personalities of the servitors of Godhead himself. Then you said the silence of other religions on this topic should not be misunderstood as implying the non-existence of any or all specification of the absolute. And you said, you concluded, there was no rational ground for assuming that Godhead is unable or unwilling to reveal his own specific self and divine paraphernalia to the serving impulse of pure souls. I mean, this to me is such a wonderful description of Krishna consciousness, how it just stands above everything else. Not that as devotees were not better, but there's just so many layers of deep information given. So where did this quote come from?
Srila Prabhupada's dear godbrother, Professor Sanyal. See, when I joined, we didn't have anything on Lord Chaitanya. And Srila Prabhupada authorized that we could read Sri Krishna Chaitanya by Professor Sanyal, his godbrother. Now, the amazing thing about Professor Sunyal's writing is, you know, he's quoting from all different sources. but you can't really tell when one stops and another begins. It's such a seamless blend of Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, and Professor Sunyal himself, that if he doesn't specifically, you know, say who's speaking, you can't tell because they all speak the same way, speak and write the same way. Okay. So, Professor Sunyal, his intention was to write a three-volume set called, the title is Sri Krishna Chaitanya, which would be the first such work in English, and specifically to appeal to the intellectuals of the Western world. Mm-hmm. And that was the book that made the first Western disciples. They were, you know, German pundits who, you know, they heard Bhan Maharaj's preaching, but it was actually Professor Sunyal who was writing the speeches for Bhan Maharaj, largely. But it wasn't Bhan Maharaj's preaching. It was actually Professor Sunyal's book that did exactly what he intended, appealing to the Western intellectuals of the superiority of Lord Chaitanya's teachings. Now, unfortunately, when Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati left the world, Professor Sunyal was kind of drafted into management to take the helm of the Gaudiya Math, but he wasn't a manager. He was a pundit, so he didn't survive too much longer after that. So he never finished the set. But that's all we had when I joined, and Srila Prabhupada authorized that we read that. That's where that's from.
You had the one volume of it or something, you said?
Yes.
Thank you. I've never seen that. Sri Krishna Chaitanya.
They're rare.
Yeah. Well, thank you for that. I've been carrying around this quote with me for 3 weeks now. It's so wonderful. Thank you.
Well, the other part of that, it is none other than he, Lord Gauranga, who every prophet and every scripture has been endeavoring since time immemorial to proclaim, would have been inadequately equipped to succeed.
Yeah.
So he honors other religions and traditions, and he very humbly proclaims the superiority of Lord Chaitanya's teachings.
Yeah, such mercy. Thank you so much. That's great. Thank you.
Thank you.
Anyone would like to ask Maharaj anything? You look cold, Kumari. Especially your good husband.
I do have a question, actually. I'm curious to know, I've always actually thought about this, the significance of Advaita Acharya's name being Advaita or non-dual, and how that plays into his significance or his position in the Panchatattva and how we can understand that.
Would you like to hear the pastime that explains that?
If we have time, yes, please.
We have all the time in the world. We cannot stay. We cannot stay. But...
yes, it's... okay. the life of Advaita Acharya has been subject of many books and tradition as well, who all collaborate that Advaitacharya's mother, Labhadevi, had a dream in which Lord Sadashiv, who is the original form of Lord Shiva, foreseeing the wicked age of Kali that destroys all godly qualities in man, Sadashiv became so filled with compassion that he went to the shore of the causal ocean to beseech Lord Mahavishnu, who lies there in mystic slumber, for his attention and grace. And there, Sadashiv performed severe austerities for 700 years on behalf of humanity. And seeing Sadashiv in a mood of such compassion for the suffering masses, Lord Mahavishnu appeared to him and spoke, "My dear Sadashiv, why are you trying to please me with difficult austerities? You and I are one." To which Sadashiv replied, "My dear Lord, unless you empower me to save mankind in the age of Kali, how can I do it?" Hearing this, Mahavishnu embraced Sadashiv, and by their shared compassion, they merged into one form, which is the manifestation of Sri Advaitacharya, who would thereafter appear on earth. Now, the dream continued, and Labhadevi saw Yamaraj approach Advaita and told him, "My dear Lord, if you descend in the age of Kali as Advaitacharya to deliver everyone, then there will be no function for me. There will be no sinners left to punish in hell." To which Advaitacharya consoled Yamaraj, saying that, "Do not worry." Okay, now, the rest of this quote from Advaitacharya was also spoken by Lord Chaitanya, who said, "All those wicked people who purposely try to avoid the wave of divine love which will inundate the world in Kali Yuga, the impersonalists, fruitive workers, false logicians, offenders, and atheists, they will still be available for you." Advaita told Yamaraj, that Yamaraj was satisfied and returned to his abode. So that dream, which is reality, Labhadevi, Advaitacharya's mother, her dream reveals how Mahavishnu and Sadashiv merged. Mahavishnu, who was obviously Vishnu Tattva, and Lord Shiva, who is Shiva Tattva, they merged. So Advaita, which means non-dual, because, you know, the different sampradayas, they emphasize more the similarity with the jiva and God. Some emphasize more the difference between jiva and God. Advaita means non-different. But Lord Chaitanya's teachings is simultaneously, inconceivably, one and different. Anyway, Advaita means non-different from the Lord, because he's the combined form of Mahavishnu and Lord Shiva, who are in truth non-different. Does that answer your question, Kumari?
Yes, Maharaj. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
Maharaj, can I ask a follow-up question on this?
Yes.
So in this chapter on Adidila text, text 12, it's mentioned that Lord Advaita Acharya is the incarnation of Mahavishnu. It's never mentioned about Sadashiv. And I had this, what's the question, with, or an argument with other devotees, because when I was new, I always thought that I always went by this verse and I never knew the Sadashiv part of it. Why is that that Krishna, Kaviraj Krishnadas did not mention this part of Sadashiv as being joined in condition of, Advaita Acharya being joined in condition of Sadashiv and Mahavishnu?
Because there's not that much difference. As the name implies, Advaita, non-different. There's not that much difference between Mahavishnu and Lord Shiva. Furthermore, as we've said before, Shiva Tattva is very complex and difficult to understand because of the combination of divine and non-divine. So Kaviraj Goswami is starting out simply, and his theology will evolve over time. Remember, we're still in the invocation, which is the thesis which will evolve throughout the upcoming chapters and khandas. Okay?
Thank you, Maharaj.
Thank you.
Anyone else? Gopika, so nice to see you. So I have a couple of questions, but we cannot hear you. Anyone would like to ask anything? So I will go ahead. I'm not sure if I heard it when you were answering Maharaj to Mother Sukavaha's questions, she was saying, what do I want, Krishna? And then you said, what do you want, Krishna? And then you said, and what do I want? Did you say that, Maharaj?
Yes.
I want as a jiva.
You know, when we're seeking confirmation of truth by the correlation of Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra, Krishna, or just, you know, we usually say it about Govardhan Hill. Giri Govardhan fulfills all desires. And that's why we say that the prayer, Vanshakalpa Tribhyasya, praying to Vaishnavas and comparing them to touchstones is really an understatement. Because a touchstone can only give you whatever you want. But a Vaishnava is far greater because we don't even know what we want. And the Vaishnavas, in conjunction with Guru Sadhu Shastra, reveal our deepest desires and direct us to their fulfillment. And therefore, the common saying that Giri Govardhan fulfills all desires because of his unique position, as there again, is Giri Govardhan Krishna or is he a devotee? And how do you answer that?
Both.
Yes. So we worship him as Krishna, and we pray to him as a devotee. And he fulfills all desires by partially making us aware of what our deepest desires actually are, and then guiding us to their fulfillment. So, you know, the confirmation of truth and the three-way collaboration of Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra take into consideration our own true desires and how to lead them to perfect fulfillment.
This is quite bewildering now, Maharaj. This, because I've been always, I thought that, as Jesus said, about your will, what's the famous phrase?
If this cup may pass from my hands, let it be. Otherwise, may thy will and my will be one. Let thy will be done, and let thy will and my will be one.
Or another one I've been, that you're, like Sukumar Sukavaha was saying, that what my Lord, would you like me to do? So, and now you are talking about my desire. So, but then you are talking about deep desires.
Yes, because Krishna has no great aspiration to fulfill our false desires or the desires of our false self. You know, devotees want to fulfill Krishna's desires, and in reciprocation, Krishna wants to fulfill his devotees' desires. And oftentimes there's competition to see who wins. But ultimately, everyone wins in this kind of competition. As devotees have no desire other than to please Krishna, Krishna's prime desire is to fulfill the desires of his devotees. But that means you're pure in real desires, not the imagined desires of your limited consciousness, but the true nature of your soul.
So the obvious question would be how to distinguish, how do we know that this is the true desire?
Same thing, cross-reference Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra. Does it fit? Does it fit that paradigm? Is it consistent? And also, it's just something that has to be revealed. It's something you can't figure out with your three-dimensional mind in the process of purification. Everything will be revealed. As the true nature of your soul awakens, your spiritual desires will manifest and Krishna will fulfill them. In reciprocation to our desire to fulfill Krishna's wishes, because ultimately they are one, even though there is sometimes loving competition, as between Mother Yashoda and Damodar.
So is this that the same, the deepest desire, that's what you call vocation, Maharaj?
Yes. Not vocation as it's used in contemporary Western society.
The calling.
Yeah. It comes from vatsalam. Calling, your spiritual gifts. I mean, it's basically the same for all living entities. Our deepest desire is to love and be loved. That is the generic similarity and desire between all souls. And the specifics of how that is manifest is unique to each soul.
If it's okay, I have a question about the desires.
living. Yes.
So while we are in the process or on the path to understanding Krishna's desires, or at least intending to one day be able to understand them, and in the meantime, we are experiencing a lot of our own desires, can we alchemize those desires, our own desires, by utilizing them in Krishna's service? And where does one draw the line? Because I know there's the concept of yukta vairagya, but where does one draw the line as to how many of my own desires can I offer, and can I offer all of them, even if they might not seemingly be in line with the typical devotional service?
Well, you can't offer anything that's not pleasing to Krishna. So whatever desires we have that are not displeasing to Krishna can be dovetailed in his service. In that way, they become purified so that more and more our real desires become clarified. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati said a wonderful thing. He said, Shuddha Nam descends from Golok and takes root in the Dham here on earth. And our Nam Seva is fortified, I'm paraphrasing, our Nam Seva is fortified by Dham Seva, because it's in the Dham that the roots of Sri Nam grow deep and nourish the devotees. Therefore, from Dham Seva comes Nam Seva, culminating in Kam Seva, meaning understanding the desires and fulfilling the desires of Krishna. So the perfect sequence is Dham Seva, Nam Seva, Kam Seva. By serving the holy Dham, by chanting the holy name, we will come to understand what are the true desires of Krishna and how we can fulfill them as the perfection of our own desires. And there again, reflecting back to the common desire amongst all souls who yearn more than anything, ultimately, to love and be loved. That's the universal commonality. The specifics varies between all the unlimited souls who are created by Krishna to enhance and expand the scope of loving reciprocation. So Krishna expands first as Srimati Radharani, because there's no pleasure in being alone. Then he realizes that she realizes that by expanding herself, there will be more exaltation and ras for Krishna. So therefore, she expands as so many sakyas and shaktis to increase the expanse of loving exchange for the pleasure of Krishna. Are we still connected?
We are, Maharaj.
Oh.
So I have one burning question before we finish. Or is there anyone who would like to say something? Kumar? We cannot hear you. You're muted.
I have a question, but I think we can wait for next time.
No, Pritam, go ahead.
Madhuri opens discussion for everyone, but she makes it really clear that everybody should give her priority.
I can wait, Maharaj. I have some patience. Go ahead, Pritam.
Maharaj, this is the same question because we are on the topic of spiritual master and disciple. Superficially, it sounds very simple question. The question is, who finds whom? Does the disciple find the spiritual master, or does the spiritual master find the disciple? I'm asking this because in ISKCON, I've seen two schools of thought. One school
we cannot hear you, Pritam. There was some kind of disconnection.
From. So, what is correct, Maharaj?
By the grace of Krishna, one receives Guru. By the grace of Guru, one receives Krishna. So, we learn from Brihad Bhagavatamrita how when, you know, Gopakumara finally makes it back home and Krishna's returning to his home with the gopas and cows, and the gopis are awaiting. And everyone was so astonished to see Krishna leave everyone to go embrace this newcomer. And they both fall unconscious when they embrace. And then when they come back to consciousness, Krishna asks this new recruit to Goloka Vrindavan, how could you have stayed away for so long? How could you have endured my separation? How could you endure life in the material world where you searched for me everywhere? You went door to door. You were mistreated, misunderstood, and you cried. I know all the ordeal that you went through because I was with you. So that short exchange reveals how desperately Krishna wants all lost souls to come home. And his search for his lost servants by sending Guru to this world to reclaim those fallen souls is intense. It's a yearning from the heart that Krishna yearns for his lost parts and parcels to come home. So therefore, he sends his representatives in the form of the various gurus to chase after the lost souls in this world. That exchange from Brihad Bhagavatamrita gives an indication how deeply Krishna wants us home. So he sends Guru to search out the lost souls. And when that yearning awakens within the heart of a jiva to come back to Krishna, then Krishna arranges the meeting with Gurudev. So it's all orchestrated by Krishna. So the first indication of divine grace is crossing paths with a representative of Krishna. The second element of divine grace is being able to recognize him as such through the process of hearing. So it's a combination of Krishna's desire and the jiva's desire And even if we don't have that desire, Krishna's representatives try to kindle that flame of devotion within our hearts and then fan it and cultivate it and direct it back to Krishna. So it's a combination of Krishna's desire and our desires, which are usually dormant and have to be awakened, and how they interact by the grace of Guru and become one. Does that answer your question?
Yes, Maharaj. Thank you. Very beautiful.
Thank you. Okay, Maji.
So this is actually related. I mean, it's the same topic. You said to take shelter of a Vaishnava is a confidential matter. Would you elaborate on that, Maharaj? Confidential matter?
Taking shelter usually involves revealing the heart and receiving appropriate guidance. Revealing the heart requires confidence. It makes you vulnerable. So you can hear from any Vaishnava, but to actually take shelter and reveal your heart and receive worthy guidance accordingly, that's a matter of some confidentiality. You have to have confidence. You have to have trust, which is prerequisite to love. So you can associate with anyone, provided they're not envious. But revealing your heart in confidence and taking shelter in that kind of relationship is more selective. Does that answer your question, Madri?
Yes, Maharaj, even answers another one which I had. So I just want to make sure. Because I think in Prabhupada's purport and also Mother Sukavaha mentioned being faithful and chaste towards spiritual master. And I was always wondering, what does that precisely mean? Because I may get inspired by so many speakers, and I sometimes feel, is that being unfaithful? But I think you just answered my question that, you know, there is nothing wrong with listening to different speakers and even sometimes asking questions, but inquiring like more confidentially and taking guidance, that's what's different. Can you
even more than guidance, taking shelter is a confidential matter. That's something you don't do with anyone and everyone.
So what's the difference? Part of taking shelter is taking guidance. Right.
Well, there again, you can take guidance from anyone if it's worthy. But taking shelter is a more confidential matter because it involves revealing your heart, which makes you vulnerable. You don't want to do that with just anyone and everyone. You can hear from anyone and everyone if they're confident to speak. But revealing your heart, you can't do unless you have confidence and trust, which are prerequisite to love. So if you have one guru, you actually have many gurus. But if you don't have one guru, you don't have any. Meaning if you're truly loyal to one authority, then you can hear from anyone whose words are consistent with his, and that does not violate the principle of loyalty or chastity. Loyalty is to the message and the messenger, and anyone who speaks consistent with that message. It's not just the message, it's the the life. Is the person's life consistent with this message?
Can you give me an example of someone who breaks that chastity? What would be the, could be the situations or circumstances?
Well, I've told the example before, and maybe even quite recently, of one godbrother who did exactly what Srila Prabhupada asked us not to do. He went to the Babaji's of Radha Kund to receive his Siddha Pranali. He didn't tell anybody. But how was it disclosed that he did so? This is hard to do without visuals, but I'll try to explain, I'll try to describe it. This godbrother started dancing around the top of the temple and then waving his arms like they were wings. And it was not a conventional kind of Vaishnav dance. So one godbrother said, hey, he was a sannyasi. He said, Maharaj, why? You know, you're dancing in a very unique way. What is the reason for this? And he revealed that I went to a Babaji of Radha Kund and received my Siddha Pranali. And in Goloka Vrindavan, I'm a peacock. And now I'm practicing how to dance like a peacock so I can return back home, back to Godhead. And then in a very short time, he left ISKCON altogether. He left Srila Prabhupada's shelter because he broke that confidence. He did exactly what Srila Prabhupada told us not to do. He was thinking it was a shortcut in his spiritual life, but it actually turned out to be a major detour. And most of all, Srila Prabhupada was not pleased. And, you know, he fell into deep maya after that. I mean, really deep maya. Fortunately, he came back to Srila Prabhupada's shelter just before he left his body. So if you're faithful and loyal to Guru, you'll be happy to hear from anyone whose message is consistent with his. And you'll be happy to avoid anyone whose message and lifestyle is not consistent. And be respectful to all. But don't be receptive to those who have a different message or a different mood. Now, you can't say different mood, inconsistent mood.
Thank you, Maharaj. So now,
gracious that you have inundated this world with the sound of the holy name. supreme touchstone, and yet I am so unfortunate that I have no attraction for it. That is Krishna, or that is Lord Chaitanya, articulating the greatest misfortune of taking for granted the treasure of the holy name. Thank you, Mother Soumya.
Hare Krishna.
I'm afraid to put Agnes on the spot, but please, there will be another session. So, Mother Jayashree, would you like to say something?
Sorry, I was muted. This is the first time I've come, Maharaj. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Very kind, very kind. It's just so much of it is just like over my head. You know, it's just when you first come, meet Srila Prabhupada or get involved, everything, it's so easy. And so, at least for me. But now it's like, whoa, I'm in this whole other realm of, you know, realizations and knowledge, and just not as easy to understand a lot of it. Maybe I'm just old.
No, that means we're becoming sober.
Wow.
And beginning to realize the extent of his gift.
Yeah.
Which is truly overwhelming.
Definitely bigger than my capacity.
Thank you so much for joining us.
Yes, thank you. Thank you for inviting me. I will join more often for sure.
Thank you.
Thank you for showing us your deities.
Oh, those were actually Ladini's deities.
Oh, wonderful.
Well, Krishna Balaram was Premarnava's deities, and Radha and Krishna, Radha Koshal Bihari, I believe is their name. Maharaj named them for Ladini.
I'm not hesitating to put you on the spot. Are you there?
She takes rest early.
No, I stayed up late.
Oh.
The only thing I really want to say is I'm just so happy to see you so generously sharing, Maharaj. I feel a like a warmth and a like a warm, cozy, inviting, comforting blanket when you speak. It just soothes, even if I don't understand everything.
That's simply a reflection of your gracious hospitality.
I'm just happy to see you, you know, really expressing your deepest heart and sharing it with us. It just brings me joy to see that. Thank you so much.
Thank you for allowing a safe place for that to occur. Safe haven.
Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
I'm going to ask Mother Vani to speak next time, unless she really would like to say something tonight. Not that, okay. Because I really extended the time today. I will.
You have a habit of doing like that.
Well, I can do both, but I go from one to that to another. Anyway. What I feel like we are creating, we are a family. That's how we call our WhatsApp group for Shana Maharaja's family. And I really feel like you are creating this loving bonds between us, Maharaj, with you in the center. which is so beautiful and really, really, as Vraj Mohan just wrote to me, Vraj Maharaj just melted my mind with something you wrote, but you are literally bounding our hearts and melting our hearts and bounding to each other and to you and to Krishna, which is so beautiful.
Well, that's what Srila Prabhupada did. In the early days, every temple was like a family. And, you know, we never experienced such a family environment before. Then, as ISKCON got larger, the family spirit was maintained in different sanghas. And family is a confidential concept, very conducive for revealing the heart.
Thank you, Maharaj, and thank you all. And I wish you a peaceful evening. And we will see each other and hear each other and hear Maharaj next Saturday.
My deep gratitude to all of you.
Rubhyascha kripa sindhu.
Thank you, Jai Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Hare Krishna.
Jai Hari Hari.